Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Great Connect podcast. I'm Carrie Allen, your host and founder of The Human Array. Today, I am joined by Rachel Lee of Ice Bath Boston and Breath. And what a magnificent person Rachel is. I am so delighted to be in this conversation with her today. As is a recurring theme here, I am delighted to have conversations with the people that have been so supportive for me in my own journey and just some of my favorite people, and want you to be introduced to them and their work. So welcome, Rachel. I'm so excited for this.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Carrie. I'm so excited. The work that you've done with the Human Array is just, we've talked about this, but it's so important to just everyone's journey as they're going through this crazy world. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. This is going to be so much fun. I'm really excited about it. So let's first just start with ice baths and breath work. Like, why together? What spurred that for you?
So when I was living in Mexico, I had moved there in 2022, actually, August 22. And I had just burned out of a teaching career. And I was trying to make friends. And my second day there, I literally didn't know anyone in this town. And I got invited to take an ice bath. And I was like, I'm from Boston. I so very intentionally moved from Boston to 100 degree heat in Mexico and was like, dang, bro, like, I really don't want to do this, but like, I need community. Like, I don't know anyone here. This was my first social invitation. And I was like, okay, I have to accept this. So I go, it's a Wednesday afternoon. It's hot out. It's down a dirt road in Tulum, Mexico. And I walk up and I see this little dinky, like tiny, like round Amazon tub. It's like kind of falling over, but it's also overflowing with ice. And I was so nervous. So of course I didn't go first. I waited and I walked. Like, I'm pretty done. Like, I'll like do a lot of things. Like, I'll self-volunteer when I shouldn't, but not for this. So I when it's finally my turn, I was guided by someone. And I was guided on what to think, how to breathe. And I was able to stay in that ice bath, fully submerged up to here for 6 minutes. And during those 6 minutes, I experienced a sense of inner strength, of calm, of relaxation, of self-confidence, of self-worth, and basically got out feeling like the Hulk, like mentally and physically. And I was so perplexed when I got out of what had just happened, because I had been searching for those sensations for the past decade. Because 10 years before that, 6 days after I graduated high school, I witnessed the death of my high school boyfriend in a car accident. And the depression and anxiety that struck a 17-year-old's life really, really altered the course of my trajectory. Mm-hmm. And to numb the pain, the doctors and therapists put me on 4 medications: trazodone to sleep, Ritalin for ADHD, Celexa and Wellbutrin for anti-anxiety. So I was on those pills for 10 years, one pill to wake up and another one to go to sleep, basically. And then the mood stabilizers. And so for that stupid bucket of water to have everything I had been looking for so many years, I was like, I don't know what just happened, but I know I need more of this. I did an experiment with myself, and for the next 100 days, I took an ice bath and did breath work every day for 100 days. And I started to feel really good. Yeah. So I reached out to my doctor and I said, hey, can we go off some of this stuff? And she was like, yeah, one at a time, but we'll do this. And so because cold water immersion really increases not only dopamine, your motivational neurotransmitter, but also norepinephrine, kind of that adrenaline boost, that's the Hulk feeling. I got out feeling very focused and very motivated. And so I didn't feel like I needed the Ritalin as much. So that was the first one we tapered off. And then because I wasn't like wired on methamphetamines I felt natural sleep pressure. And then we weaned off the trazodone. And then because I was waking up feeling more energized and a better mood, I weaned off the Celexa. And so in a little over 3 months, I went from 4 pills a day to 1. And I had already been, at that moment, I thought I had been taking care of my mental health from every possible angle. I was in therapy. I had a psychiatrist, I had a therapist. I had saw my GP every year. And heck, I was a strength and nutrition coach. Like, I was a woman's health coach. I thought I had all the certifications, like, kind of possible at that point. And so for these two methodologies to bring so much to my life that I didn't know was possible. Ever since then, I've dedicated my life to studying cold water immersion and breath work, breathing mechanics, all different types of breath work, just to see how we can take a really complementary mind-body approach to health and healing.
Ah, I mean, you know that that just sings to my heart what you say, and what a powerful story. Like, this is it, right? That we have the opportunity. There is more out there for us to uncover, and having that moment to just have that awareness of, oh my gosh, there are things that I still haven't even tapped into yet. That could be that. I was just speaking with somebody yesterday about that third door, right? Like, this isn't working. Where's the other option? And you were gifted with that.
It's so funny. I mean, I'm a big fan of taking what I call left turns in life. People say I've had like 9 lives. And I believe in taking the left turn, trying the thing that scares you. I believe fear is truly an invitation.
Yeah.
Something that could possibly be really right for you, that could have a large impact on your life. And so metaphorically stepping into that bucket of water is now something that has taught me to step into many other doors that might be uncomfortable or situations or scared or really like those big moments in life that you're like, I don't know if I can do it. But the cold water just teaches you, like, okay, I can step into this fear. I can step into that fear.
Yeah. Well, and I love that you channel that energy that you already have into a modality that supports that, to support others who are coming up against that fear on the regular, right? High achievers, corporate executives, parents, right? Just in general, I think more of us than none of us are coming up against those things. It's bravery. Like, are you going to choose to jump off the cliff and see what happens, or are you going to stay comfortable? And I love that the modality offers that.
Yeah. And I really appreciate you saying the word bravery, because I think, yes, bravery, but also safety. So I think something that I realized for my own life path was that safety is a prerequisite to success.
Yeah.
You don't feel safe, you really can't launch off your own rocket. And with, I know a lot of people know Wim Hof breathwork and the whole Wim Hof method, which does integrate cold water immersion and breathwork. The way that I do it and the way that we do it at Ice Bath Boston and Breath is just a little different, because instead of kind of seeing how extreme we can be, it's how much safety can I cultivate in my body, in my physical presence, and then what can I do from there? Because as we've had so many discussions about it with your breath, right? We breathe 21,000 times a day, and the way that we breathe can be reflective more of sympathetic nervous system activation, the sympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system, the more colloquial kind of fight or flight branch. Or even on like a very micro grade, we are sending signals of threat to the body. And another kind of visual I like to give about that, about why learning to keep a nice horizontal breath, Dr. Belisa Branich has popularized a lot, her methodology, we work together on that, is that the diaphragmatic breath and your intercostals, basically, your intercostals and your ribcage really need to open up. But when we feel threatened, it's almost like you're in a boxing ring and you're racing up about to take a punch. Like, what do? We clench, brace, we self-bind. Yeah. And when we are in that threatened state, our breath comes up a lot higher. It becomes a lot more vertical.
Yeah.
And from there, it's like, okay, if we want to feel safe in our bodies, then we have to not only create the context for safety, right? Like, there are so many people that live in truly physically unsafe environments in this world. This is a chaotic place. And so there is a lot of changing of physical circumstance, but there also is for mentally, it's like, okay, how can we decrease the size of the wave coming at us, the tsunami? If there's less coming at us, then there's less for us to have to deal with. But also, how can we strengthen the size of our house, our coping mechanisms and whatnot? And so with that, when we can feel, when we can teach our body to feel safe, then we can have a nice lower, larger, more lateral expansion of a nice diaphragmatic breath, which we see a lot in the literature with individuals with anxiety, with panic attacks, with really different breathing mechanics.
Yeah.
So I don't even remember your initial question, but.
No, that's how we do. Well, I mean, you took it into a place that, like, one, I can personally just speak to, and certainly would love to share this as a reflection of how amazing your work is, because for me, I've done a lot of things, right? Just like you were saying, I've do this, this is how I live. And yet something was still blocking me and I couldn't quite figure out what that was. And when I was introduced to you and what you were doing, I was like, oh, I don't know if I feel excited about this. I'm going to take my first.
Thank you for describing every one of my clients.
But something in me is like, do it. Just do it. You're fine. You got it, right? Like, I tend to be similar to you where it's like, oh, that feels hard. Yes. I want to figure out if I could do it. Like, let's see. Let's see what happens.
For a reason.
I mean, there's some of us that have to be that way. Otherwise, we would all just sit around in our pajamas doing nothing. Right?
Yeah.
And you unlocked so much for me. I had been told before, right? Breathing up here, and had multiple people ask me about stress, et cetera, but I had yet to be able to make the mental connection of what was physically happening in my body and kind of fuse those two together in a way that just allowed me to like turn the key, right? And then open the door. And okay, now there's like a brand new level and layer of awareness and physicality for me that now it's like, okay, I got this. Okay. And now I can feel that shift in my body, that change between the stress and the non-stress. And I'm infinitely grateful, and I hopefully still have the record for expansion. It's like, that's like a badge. I need a like certificate on my wall.
Yes. So for everyone, so what the assessment that we use is called the breathing IQ. Dr. Belisa and I just published a peer review on this in Frontiers in Physiology in April 2025. And what's really cool is this is an anthropometric index. So it's basically like a little quantitative assessment of like, how well are you diaphragmatically breathing? And we take this on everyone the first time they come in. And then the really cool thing about the paper and Dr. Brandish's work is she gives you a plan. So there is a set of corrective exercises, and it's also not you're breathing wrong, you're breathing right. It is, we want to have all available breathing styles to be able to choose from and just to be aware, just to be strategic. And so when we're really reminding the body of its capacity for this nice horizontal breath, we're waking up muscle memory, basically. So it's not something that you've never had before. In a paper we're writing right now, it was a study of 168 four to 14 year olds. And we found that the breath really changes around age 5 and a half.
Ah.
You start going to kindergarten. You start sitting all day, tests.
We're going to go down this path. Okay.
So in for you, it was, going, we have like not only a letter grade for someone's capacity of being able to recall this horizontal breath, we have a percentage too of the degree of thoracic expansion, and you hold the record for fastest turnaround time. You literally went from like an F to an A, and I think it was a single month. And it was incredible. And it was just when we remind our bodies of this relaxed, expansive breath that we can call upon, it's something that we then really do notice of in this moment, whether I'm like walking into a big meeting, a pitch or whatever, like what breath am I calling upon? Or for people with panic attacks, sometimes a lot of people or high stress, or some people come to me and they're like, I just want to get a better handle on my emotions. Like I get really angry really fast. And when I'm all the way there, like I can't come back down.
Yes.
So knowing our body, knowing the somatic sensations, warm hands, a furrowed brow, a shallow breath, knowing the precursor somatic sensations, the signs before we get to a full panic attack, an angry outburst, whatever it is, we can bring ourselves back sooner. But it's truly just knowing our bodies. And so when we see that shallow breath, I'm like, oh, I'm getting anxious. Let me intervene now before I'm there.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I love about it. Not because I'm a perfectionist and an overachiever, but also... I wear them. They help me do what I do. So they are badges. But because it is possible to go from this, and it doesn't have to be in a month, but like your body remembers, right? Your body has the key. And what you're speaking into is what I feel so passionately about too is, and I love that you introduced kids into this, because we don't have an operating manual. Nobody, well, these days, these modern beautiful days, you know, but I've studied a lot that like, oh wow, Indigenous cultures used to teach kids how to breathe. And it's like, we just think that it, you just do, right? But there's so many also additional components to this world at this point that are not helping us do it in the way that our body kind of knows how to do. It's getting intercepted. Kindergarten, school, right? And then how do we help ourselves remember, get back to our own operating manual? This is what that looks like for me. And this is what I should tune into to help myself stay safe and feeling safe. I love that. Yes. Yes.
And I really appreciate you mentioning Indigenous cultures too. There's a great mention of a really interesting writer. His name was, I believe, George Catlin. He wrote a beautiful book. He was actually a Philadelphia portrait painter several hundred years ago. And he got really sick and he wanted to travel. And so he went westward and he started studying Indigenous cultures. And he was one of the unique people there because he wasn't trying to teach anything. He was truly there to observe. Yeah. And kind of how do they stay so healthy, right? Like, compared to in that time, the modern people in the cities and whatnot. And the biggest thing he talks about in this book is the breath, like how highly Indigenous cultures regarded the breath and how kind of sacred it was, that it is like the medicine. And so even in his book, how he describes they would take infants and they, during the hot summer months, they would make sure not to hold them too close to the mother because that would overheat them. And then they would start mouth breathing. And when children are very small, gently closing their jaw so that way they're breathing through the nostrils and whatnot. And so this sacred, sacred piece,
yes.
Breathing through, I mean, 95% of the day, breathing through the nose, mouth breathing is good in two contexts, when we need to call upon more greater breath capacity for athletic events, whatever, singing. Or I use mouth breathing when I'm teaching someone the sound of their inhale and exhale. Most people don't know whether they're inhaling or exhaling. and it's sound. And then keeping it low, the breath low, and slow. Breath rate is a big thing that we talk about too. I notice my breath getting not only shallow, but faster when I'm anxious. And a big trend I've seen in my practice is fast breath, fast mind.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
I have a lot of people that can't, like, cannot slow down their breath. And they're like, no, I'm trying. I'm like, yeah, but your longest exhale that you claim to be able to do is 4 seconds.
That is long.
So, like, really, like, we can't, this world just makes us get so far away from our present body. And I love mindfulness. I mean, excuse me, I love breathwork because it is a form of mindfulness. It's just being with your breath.
Yeah.
And for people that try to use meditation that are like, yo, like, I can't do that. Like, I tried it. Like, my head was spinning. I didn't sit quietly. I was just going around with all my thoughts and it sucked. And I have definitely had those days of meditation. I, at one point I could do it. I had a really nice long headspace streak and then I broke it and I was very upset. And, but breath work is like this great intermediate where you have to focus on doing something rather than how a lot of people kind of misinterpret meditation as the absence of doing something. Right. It's hard not to do in this.
Yeah. 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 And such a great gateway too, right? To that practice that if you want to cultivate it, like look at other modalities like breath work, et cetera, that are equally powerful and also can help you start to cultivate that. And I've always just enjoyed the science behind the breath work and the different lengths of time and the inhales and the outhale of outhales. There you go. It's fine. And you're making me think of like, so I'd love to, we have two, there are multiple things that I'm like, okay, how are we going to get all of this into this episode? So you may have to come back, which is one, my daughter just finished kindergarten and she had a spill. She fell off of her scooter, coming home from school the very end of the school year. And she was distressed, right? Like really, I mean, it was a pretty big fall. Not gonna lie. I was a little distressed myself, but, you know, tried to find the calm within me to help her be able to borrow that calm. And so once we got her home and she was able to sit down on the bench, she started using her breath. And I was like, you know, I'm like, I'm supposed to be tending to her wound. And I'm like, where's my camera? How do I record that this child just spontaneously used her breath to calm herself? And after the fact, she said to me, well, my mind was saying, I'm never going to heal. I'm never going to heal. I'm never going to heal. And she's like, or no, my body was saying, I'm never going to heal. I'm never going to heal. I'm never going to heal. And so she's like, but I know that's not true. So I used my mind and my mind was like, you can just help it calm. And she like breathed herself calm. So when you talk about remembering, right, and that interception or that unfortunate left turn that happens in childhood to like coping mechanisms kind of coming in other ways, it's there. Like, yeah, we talk about breathing and they do it in school and like there are things, right? And for her in that moment, at that heightened state, to be able to access that was like, I know.
I just got the chills. And because like, first of all, your daughter's incredible. We've talked about this. Your daughter is an old soul. She's an old soul. She's been around the sun many more times than her biological age reflects.
100%. Yes.
But that's so incredible that at her age, she was able to say, I have these two different voices and I am going to choose this one.
Yeah.
And it truly is just the art of choice. And, but as I say, with teaching kind of any coping mechanism, right? I I've studied a lot about maladaptive versus adaptive coping. And I stumbled upon that a couple of years ago just because I was trying to figure out, like, how do we get stuck?
Yeah.
Get stuck.
What is it that happens? Yeah. And
it actually started when I, in my first business, when I was a strength trainer and nutrition coach, because in trying to help people get fitter, help people reach their nutrition goals, like people, a lot of it was just helping people get unstuck. And with adaptive coping is any way of kind of letting the emotion bloom, acknowledging it and letting it fully express itself, and then kind of like a wave, it quells. The other angle that's necessary for adaptive coping is problem solving. And so that is tackling the actual thing that's bothering you. And so you do that by getting social support, informational support, like whatever it is. Maladaptive coping is just any way we cope that doesn't do that. And so it's a lot of avoidance. It's a lot of behavioral disengagement. And it's, I think when we talk about resilience and in that human potential, longevity, I think maladaptive coping is one of the, is the cornerstone we really should be talking about during our entire lifespan. Because if we can understand our own personal tendencies of maladaptive coping, and we all have them, like, yes, like when I get stressed, like I'm gonna accidentally reach for my phone and scroll for like 10 minutes and be like, wait, I'm still stressed. I actually need to take care of that.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, maybe I can go do this now. But if we can teach adaptive coping from a really young age, but in order to do that, we have to know our bodies. We have to know ourselves. And so going back to Charlotte, like her being like, I hear my body saying, like, this is not going to be okay. But on the, like, the other reason why I'm like, she's really, really, really mature is because she actually identified in herself a cognitive distortion. How old is she again?
She just turned 6. I know. How am I going to, I got to stay a step ahead.
So your 6-year-old identified that she was going to, old, I self-identified that she was catastrophizing evidence to negate her cognitive distortion and implemented a body tool to convince her body and then therefore her mind that she was safe. Congratulations, you're actually raising a 30-year-old and a 6-year-old's body. But like that was, I'm so grateful that you brought this up, because that's all I am striving to teach people to do is exactly what Charlotte did there. And you can insert whatever stressor is in our lives, insert any cognitive distortion that we might have, but that's the art of coping,
right? And it's like, it's just you know, I think when I hear like that story and you say that, it's like there's so many tiny microscopic things that accumulate to be able to create that choice moment and that decision for her, right? And for all of us, truly. And so, yes, I can practice the breath work and I can do all these things in a safe environment. And at the same time, when you have that trigger come in, It's how do you keep microscopically moving yourself towards the remembrance of the tools that you have, right?
Yeah. And this is where I love neuroplasticity. I mean, this is learning, right? And this is why I call it the AIR method, is what we use for helping people really with panic attacks, with anxiety, with most of the things that people come to me for. A stands for adaptive coping. I stands for imprinting safety in the body through breath, and R stands for reclaiming your response through cold exposure. So with panic attacks and what you say about practicing kind of, kind of these things to be able to recall upon them in the moment that matters, we use intentional hyperventilation as a way to desensitize someone to the body sensations of a panic attack. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'll even ask, so we start extremely small. We start with five breaths. Some people come and five breaths is really scary. Five big, fast breaths is really scary because it reminds them of hyperventilating, of a time when they lost control, and that's terrifying. Yeah. But being able to practice in a safe, controlled environment is so important because really week after week, it wires someone's brain to say, hey, that sensation, that is safe. I don't have to set off a five alarm fire and alter the course of my day.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of times people will come to me who have tried a lot of different things. They're already in every container they should be basically for handling a panic attack and getting therapy from anxiety or panic disorder. But a lot of other approaches kind of force you to calm down. Yeah. But you can't force yourself to calm down if your body is screaming it's on fire, if it's screaming it's unsafe in those moments. And so that's why I am such a fan of a wide variety of breathing techniques, because there are slow ones, there are pause ones, there are fast ones, there are mechanics, there are so many ancient breathing techniques, and they all have a purpose. The other thing with panic attacks too is being able to conquer that fear. And that's why we use ice baths. But just to clarify, we customize the temperature to everyone. So it doesn't have to be ice cold. It doesn't have to be 32. The literature shows you get benefits still at 59 Fahrenheit or 14 C. And so there are also seven different positions we start people in. I have many people start sitting on the edge of the tub wearing scuba booties. Because a lot of literature, especially before cold plunges started to become a trend, was done in what's called the cold presser test. And this is someone just putting their hand in a bucket of cold water, and then they had all these sensors hooked up to them, and they measured like the therapeutic benefits of that immersion and resilience. And so one more inch of your body in water, like you're good. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be up to here to take those benefits. Yeah. So I love the part that you were saying about practicing.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I enjoy most about your work is that it is building, the neural pathway, right? Like that groove to say, right, when this happens, instead of these deep grooves over here, I'm going to start like filling those in, but I'm going to start moving myself into this one. And, the other thought that came up for me as you were saying that is, I lost it.
Neuroplasticity.
Around just creating the sensation that you're going to have to overcome, right? And so having that moment, one, the resiliency, that just speaks to me because, I want more resiliency in myself. I want more resiliency in my kids and anybody that I can support in that way, because that's how this world works. It is crazy. And the more you can access those tools and remember them, right? Like it's there, it's ready, and it's accessible for you.
Yeah. And it's all about what I call just your coping toolkit. Yeah. So yes, we want to cultivate a baseline kind of level of safety, calm, relaxation. Boundaries are a huge thing. We work on it in my office, which I call the Zen Den.
Yeah.
I have this so funny. When you order something online and it's like not the same size that you thought it is.
Yes.
I thought I ordered a small whiteboard. I ordered a massive whiteboard. Hide it behind the armoire in the office. I have to just put it behind it. But I'm just such a visual person that I've had so many really important conversations in my life that I'm like, I need this like on a chart. and so that's what we do. Like we will write things out. We write out routines. We write down boundaries. It's all about Like, what do you need to be able, not to survive, but to thrive? And what do you need to tell people? How do you need to self-advocate in your life? Because it's interesting, like, I can teach you a million and one breathing techniques, but if you don't have the space in your life, if you don't have the time, if you don't have the capacity, like, it's not gonna work. So boundary setting is a big thing that we do. And also kind of just talking about, what do we each need in our own relationships?
Yeah.
Like, how can I self-advocate in, whether it's romantic, family, like someone, your own kids, like, how do I self-advocate for myself to be like, hey, like, I need this time to be able to show up maximally in that container too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And the visual that came up for me before that I was trying to connect to is very similar, which is like, you were talking about that wave, right? And that so often we're like trying to cut it off and stem it and like just stop it. And it's like, all of this allows you to access that wave being a little bit gentler, or you standing a little stronger, not getting knocked over, or being able to stand up a little bit more. And that's what I love about the work and all the different forms of breath work, is just, okay, each time that happens, I now have a toolkit to pull from of how do I make it just a little bit gentler, each time it crashes. And it doesn't mean that I have to be like, okay, no more waves. Like, it isn't 0 to 60 in that way. It's more about, how do I take on the waves that are naturally going to come and maybe make them a little gentler?
I'm so grateful that you really visualized that and painted that picture, because I think so many people are waiting for their life to pause and then they're going to implement all the things that they're going to say that they're going to do. And it's like, the waves are never going to stop.
Nope.
The ocean ain't going to stop. Like, life just keeps going. And yes, we want to mitigate the size of the wave. It definitely is easier to implement these things when the size of the wave is smaller. But also, I like to think of kind of like the three little pigs. Like, are you in the house of, like, what is it, like straw, sticks, or like brick? Like what's your house? What are your coping toolkit? How strong is that?
Yeah.
And that's why I've been working with a good number of women that are in perimenopause right now, or menopausal. And what's really interesting is I'm a massive advocate of women's health, because estrogen affects every single organ system in a woman's body. You really think it's only reproductive, but it is musculoskeletal. It is brain function. It is memory. It is emotion. It is cognition. It is heart function. It is the way our body fat's distributed that changes kind of before and after menopause. And what a lot of women are never told is that the fluctuations and the eventual decline in estrogen, basically your woman's brains really rely a lot on estrogen for cognition, for reactivity, for mood. And those fluctuations lead to a lack of that estrogen support in the brain. And what I really, really wish more women knew was that during menopause, like, women are 2 to 4 times more likely to get an episode of major depressive disorder, like major depressive disorder. And I'm seeing a big influx of clients in this stage of life, because they are like, I am a strong woman. Like, I did X, Y, Z. And all of a sudden I am this, and I don't know how I got here, and I don't know how to get back, but I have a doctor, I have a PCP, I have an OBGYN, I'm in therapy. Like, I feel like I'm doing all the right things. I'm on HRT. Like, why don't I feel good? And it is going back to neural pathways and the size of the wave. It is, I mean, we've seen some incredible women doing the work, and they've come in with panic attacks and they couldn't drive on day one. And 6 weeks later, like, they're back at work, they feel great, they're driving. And it is using the whole AIR protocol to desensitize those sensations of panic, of mood changes, to be, and then building that foundational base of coping skills and safety in the body and tools to pull out when you need them. Mm-hmm. But that's why I like to say, it's never too late to start this work, but it's also never too early. Like, why wait until the house is going to be on fire? Why not build your foundation now? And even like, it's really interesting because my business kind of changes in the summer. Like, I see people being like, I'm on vacation. Like, life is great. Like, I don't need any of that. And I'm like, start now. So that way when it's dark at 4 p.m. in Boston and you feel like crap, like, you don't quite feel that bad. Like, it's important to be doing, and I mean, I say this personally, I say this in everything I've been studying too. Like, it's important to be doing the work as early as possible, preventatively.
Yes. Yes. Well, I think you spoke to it through this whole conversation, right? Which is, we aren't really brought up or taught in a way of where we're learning our body, we're learning these systems, we're taking on these maladaptive approaches, which again are right, like, put up a wall so that the wave doesn't hit you.
Yeah.
It's like, but the wave is gonna keep hitting the wall. And I heard something recently that has just been like a bit of a thematic experience in all of these conversations, which is humans need volcanic eruptions to make change. And it was like, it was just a beautiful visual, right? Of like, I'm comfortable, I am scrolling and I'm doing these things and like, things aren't so bad. It's okay, right? And then in order to get you to shift, sometimes you need this big event. And you wouldn't need the big event if you listened a little bit more closely, if you were a little bit more in tune. But we're at this moment in the world where most of the population hasn't really learned their operating system, hasn't been taught these natural things, and quite frankly, was left turned into a different approach. And so now it's cultivating the shift back so you can get ahead of the things rather than allow the volcano. Like, if the ground is rumbling, do something about it. You don't have to wait for the lava to be spewing out of the top of the mountain.
And I love that metaphor. It captures it so perfectly. The thing that makes me genuinely sad is how normal it is for the ground to be trembling. Yeah. And for people to, I mean, we just live in a world where the ground is constantly quaking in so many different areas, and people are made to believe that they should just continue going. Like, that's just the way things are going to be. There's no other choice. And it pains me when people really feel that way, because it's not the easiest choice. It's not the most obvious one. But in the long run, it is the best choice.
Yeah.
But that's why, especially, I love your story. I love really hearing about corporate leaders who are really incentivizing their employees, their people, to take the time, set the boundaries, do the work they need to sustain their performance. Because I mean, aside from like perimenopause, panic attacks, anxiety, like burnout is the biggest thing that I see in people. And that's why it's this pressure that we all feel. But when we have, I really love working with companies and leaders who are looking for sustainable leadership and for modeling that and for bringing tools to their people. Because if you want to keep going, you have to invest the energy and tools and teach that it's possible to go on without the ground constantly quaking.
Yeah, I think you're tapping into something that is so paramount, right? Which is, we've normalized that the ground shaking is normal. We've normalized that. That is not normal. But to your point, you said earlier about somebody not even being able to take those five breaths, that's because they've normalized that this is. And so that unwinding to even know what safety could feel like is a huge step. And I love the work that you're doing from a perimenopausal perspective, because that is a bit preventative. That is a bit getting ahead of it. And as somebody that is in, at, or approaching, I don't really know, but I'm
big time.
I'm around about that frame, right? And so, but the point is really, like, I know I'm around about that.
Yeah.
And I'm actually looking forward to the shift, because there are beautiful things that come from the grandmother era and why women, and so many empowering things that, like, heck yeah, I want to support my body through this transition the best possible way I can. So as I hit 40, I mean, this has been a much longer journey for me in general, but as I hit 40, can I start thinking about, like, how am I transitioning? How am I allowing my body to continue to evolve? Right? Again, back to the renormalizing that process, rather than, oh, I'm just going to be 20 forever and I'm going to stay in that body, because that's not what's going to happen, even if you try.
Yeah. And that's why I also, I see people get so much work done so quickly. They really launch on their journeys when they're working with me and a couple other containers at the same time.
Yeah.
The best one is kind of, I mean, there are a lot of people that I have that, like, they're also in talk therapy, and
yeah.
Talk therapy and body and any body-based work is, like, so complementary. If you're stuck, you need to pair those two things together and you'll fly.
Yes.
And I don't care what body-based work you do. If breath work vibes with you, great. If yoga or massage or Reiki or whatever it is, like, go do your thing. Find your happy place.
Yeah.
But it's that reframe that is necessary to be able to do the body-based work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that little tapping into what is our inner narrative? What is the thought that perhaps is keeping us stuck? There have been many in my life. What reframe do I have to do about that? Whether it's how I need to hustle to feel valuable, how I can't stop, how I have to just, like, perform at a high level to be valuable. Reframing our value set. So, because a value is simply a characteristic and the way that it is very specifically stated in our minds that makes us valuable to ourselves. And a lot of times our values don't change, even though our lives, the context, drastically change. It's not saying that the value of hard work, the value of excellence, whatnot, needs to be gone, but it is simply reframing it and saying, how do I need to reword that in my life to then be able to make the space for what my reality truly is?
Yeah. I love how we're wrapping this, because I think so much of, you know, body accesses the mental accesses the body, right? And it's just this winding path of, and I think there's a lot of other bodies, the emotional body, the energetic body, the spiritual body, right? Of all these different components of overall health. And it isn't, you have to do all of them at the same time. It's allowing them to open the next door of, oh, okay. Oh, wow. I'm doing this breath work. And this word just keeps, like, this attachment to whatever that is. Like, okay, let's spend some time on the mindset to then, oh, that's actually impacting my ability to do this or whatever that is. And I agree with you. And I love your work and practitioners similar to you that really see how that weaving together is the most impactful, right? And so it's, here's my component. Here's the things that I weave together. Here's all of this. And, like, keep cultivating all the different pieces and parts to what's actually going to help you continue to make that progress. I love that.
I better said it better myself.
It's just it's why I enjoy our work together. Our conversations are always just like, oh, and I love so much all the research you've done and the studying to be able to connect what's happening with how we actually work through it. And it's just amazing work. So grateful to be connected with you.
Thank you so much, Carrie. This has been just such a fun talk.
I know. And I like the one question I had that I was like, I'm definitely going this direction. We didn't do. And so, but that may have to come. And maybe it's actually more appropriate for after you're back from your big adventure.
Probably.
I love it. This was amazing. Thank you, Rachel, for being here. I have enjoyed this tremendously. And thank you to everyone for watching. If you're looking to connect with Rachel and get into more of her work and breath work and ice baths and all the amazing things that she's woven together in this conversation, all of her information will be in the description of the episode. And we look forward to seeing you next time. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.